Thank you, Dr. Polonitska. I very much appreciate your calling in today.
Thank you for having me, and good morning.
Yeah, thank you so much. UPMC is the company through which you do some of your work, and I just think they've been talking about this, and it's popped up in some of the communities around here, the increasing rate of teen suicide. Is that increasing rate going up exponentially? Tell us about this idea. Teen suicide, still a big societal issue for us.
It is, and, we know that COVID and the pandemic and a lot of the changes that happened in our world because of that have been stressful for everyone. And while that has contributed for teens, for some of the increase in suicide risks, we've actually been seeing increasing rates of suicide in young people and teens even before that.
Is there anything in particular you can attribute that to?
We think there's several factors. One we know is the social media that has been increasing the amount of bullying that teens face on a regular basis. There's always been bullying, but we know with social media that is 24/7. So that is something that has contributed to the stressors that teens feel. There's been increasing stressors with school, especially again with the pandemic and some of the changes with that. And just the difficulties in the world that adults feel can impact teens. So when families are under stresses, if there's losses, deaths, but also losses in jobs, financial stresses, those things can weigh on young people and teens as well.
Elaborate a little bit on this idea that one of the contributing factors is social media. How does that dynamic work, kind of in a nutshell, if you can?
Well, before, when kids or teens would be bullied, thinking of my generation, your generation, bullying might happen at school. And that would happen for so many hours a day, but then you get to go home. And you get to escape that, and you get to be in a safe environment. With social media, you're never really safe from that. We're always connected. And that has wonderful benefits for teens to always be connected to the friends, to the positive social supports. But the downside of that is to feel always connected to the negative, to feel that the negative impacts, the negative social interactions that you get, are not just during the school day, that they can reach you at home. And so for some teens, it can feel like there's no escape from that, that will never get better. And so when people feel hopeless, that's often a risk factor for suicide. If you feel like there's no way out, that this thing that you're facing will never improve. And so when you have something like negative interactions on social media that never stop, that are there 24/7, it can feel that way for teens to not be able to see that this will get better, that it won't always be like that.
You mentioned the pandemic had an impact. I imagine shutdowns and isolation might be a factor. I guess we still had our smartphones and those kinds of connections, but that isolation, that was one and done, but that's having a lingering impact?
It does. So especially for teens at developmental stages where they were, we would normally expect them to be attaching more to their peers and engaging more socially with their peers as they're entering adolescence. When pandemic hit and they were now in lockdown, yes, they could connect through electronics and virtually, but being able to have that one-on-one interaction, which is still important, in-person interactions and in-person social engagement, is often more important than we give credit for, especially since we can be so connected with people. And so that was especially hard for kids and teens who are just starting to develop those close social connections, to have that kind of cut off and put on hold.
Well, there's some factors that lead to suicide. The presence of social media and the pandemic were maybe contributing topics, but what is happening in a person's life, particularly a teenager's life, or what are some of the circumstances?
So we know that mental illness is the leading risk factor for suicide. So things, like obviously depression, but also risk factors like substance abuse and other mental illnesses can contribute to suicide. And it's often the risk for suicide is a combination of that kind of predisposing vulnerability, because again, you know, not everyone who is depressed, not everyone who has a mental illness thinks of suicide or attempts to commit suicide, but if you have that predisposing vulnerability and then additional stressors that may now be harder to cope with, so a loss, a death, or a loss in a relationship, a romantic relationship or a friendship, if there is you know, family violence or abuse at home, if there are is bullying going on, if they're struggling with school academically or discipline problems, those things can contribute to just make an individual, make a teenager especially, feel overwhelmed and not know how to deal with that.
You've talked,
and there are teens who are just impulsive. So we know that teen years, developing brain, that adolescents don't always think ahead and make the best decisions. And so when you combine some of these risk factors with impulsivity, that becomes a very significant risk for teenagers.
You've talked about the presence of guns in a home as being a factor. How would you describe that as a factor?
So, obviously, you know, weapons, guns, can be an extremely lethal means of a suicide attempt, and an attempt that one may not be able to come back from. We think of potentially other attempts that if someone tries to overdose, they have some time after the fact to say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, and to seek help. The problem with a firearm is that if someone makes an impulsive decision in the heat of the moment, in a moment of despair, something significant has happened, but not something that is unfixable, right? A very bad grade, or they get suspended from school, or their boyfriend or girlfriend breaks up with them. If a firearm is present and easily accessible, they have the ability to then make an impulsive decision that is very lethal, that is, you are not able to come back from. And so that's our concern with firearms. It's not that firearms are the only method that someone may use to end their life, but is an extremely lethal one, and one that can be used in a moment of despair, used in a moment of impulsivity, that doesn't allow then for afterthought to say, oh, wait a second, I need to get help, this was a bad decision.
Should parents keep all guns locked up all the time if they have any teen in the house at all, or any young person in the house at all, even if they don't have any of the common warning signs or risk factors?
We, you know, as medical professionals would say that that is the safest, to have all guns locked up at all times with ammunition separated, because again, even though there are risk factors and warning signs that some might see with teens if they're depressed or they have been talking about feeling hopeless, we also know that there are suicides that happen. There have been zero warnings that destroyed their entire life. So again, a weapon there that is easily accessible means that that one moment of disability that no one saw coming. You're not necessarily worried about your teen. There will probably be other teens, other children in your house, and to prevent something bad from happening with another child or another teen that you know, makes an impulsive decision, whether they're intending to or just fooling around, it is the safest to have those locked up and stored where, you know, an adult, a responsible adult, can get to them when they need to get to them, but not where a teen or a young child could make a mistake that would prove to be life-altering for everyone.
Well, we're lucky enough locally. We have an active group of individual, primarily women, who are doing the Be Safe program and making sure that all kinds of home hazards are brought up and talked about for residents of the home and for visitors. So we will continue that. We have lots more to talk about, so we'll continue our conversation at 7:40. Before I let you go on this particular segment, any common help, either websites or information you'd like to impart on our audience?
Well, the big thing that happened this summer was that the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline went from a rather long number that one had to have written down or remember to 988. So very similar to the 911, that anyone can call 988 and they can be connected to someone who can talk them through if they're in a moment of crisis, if they're having suicidal thoughts, if they're, you know, a parent who has a child there that's expressing them to them, they can call the hotline for help.
988. Well, that's simple enough to remember. Dr. Polonitska, thank you so much for this segment. I'm going to put you on hold. You can either call back or stand by. And thank you so much for devoting this whole hour to us for this conversation. We thank Tyler Wagner up at UPMC Susquehanna for making sure we got connect up. Thank you, Nicole. We'll talk again in about 15 minutes.
Okay, you're welcome.
That is Dr. Nicole Polonitska. She's a PhD clinical psychologist with UPMC in Central Pennsylvania. In this particular case, Central Pennsylvania means just the broad Harrisburg State Capital Region. I believe she's based out of Mechanicsburg. And talking about teen suicide, that 988 number, one worth remembering. We'll finish our conversation starting at 7:40 this morning.
On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center being fabulous over in the next room, doing everything that he possibly could to be a great producer. So we always appreciate his help and hard work. We're right in the middle of our interview with Dr. Nicole Polonitska. She is a PhD and clinical psychologist at UPMC in Central Pennsylvania. We're talking about the increasing rate of teen suicide that exists in the U.S. right now. She talked about some individuals that may be vulnerable and mental health factors, including depression, but that teen suicide not limited to individuals that display any warning signs at all. So we can talk more about that. Good morning, Nicole. Thank you for staying on the line. We appreciate it.
Good morning. You're welcome. It's good to talk with you.
Warning signs. Is there anything we should watch out for? We used to talk about somebody who would give things away that belong to them. I'm sure there's more scientific and more significant ones to pass along as well.
There are. And you know, one of the things that makes it difficult to predict suicide is that it's a relatively rare event when we think about it in the, you know, big picture, that it's an event that doesn't happen often. So events that don't happen often can be difficult to predict. However, there are some things that would signal to an adult, a parent or a caregiver of a teen, that perhaps that this teen, this child is thinking of suicide, and we should pursue asking them more about it. So some things that we know that are predictors of future attempts is a previous attempt. Anyone that has already made any kind of attempt on their life, no matter how serious or lethal we might view it as an outsider, if they did something that they thought could end their life, that is a predictor that they could try it again. Someone who is expressing suicidal thoughts or has said out loud that they have some kind of plan, talking about dying. So someone who might, you know, more than just a passing kind of thing in relation to something that's seen on TV or the loss of someone, but someone who mentions their own death or disappearing or being gone, that would be a red flag. Again, we talked about depression. So if a teen is depressed, and especially if they're feeling hopeless about the future, suicide is more likely to occur if a person thinks there's no way to solve a problem. So it's not just that depression itself is a risk factor, but it's depression with that hopelessness. A teen who is impulsive or one who is using substances. So we know that substances of any kind can impair judgment. And you couple that with a teen who may be more predisposed to be impulsive, and there is an increased risk of harming themselves, because impulsive teens tend not to think things through, and if you add on a substance that's impairing their thought process, then we heighten that. If there's been a recent significant loss or a significant life event, so a death in the family or a friend group, if there's a divorce in the family, if they've broken up with a romantic partner, if they're failing at school, if they've gotten kicked off their sports team, things like that, when there is a teen that may already be impulsive or may be depressed, would be a warning. If there's a significant change in their personality or their behavior, so a teen goes from being pretty happy and bubbly to being sad or withdrawn, irritable, any kind of significant change in their day-to-day, if A teen who had a pretty regular schedule is now sleeping all the time, or they suddenly don't want to hang out with their friends or participate in their hobbies. That would be a concern. A teen who has low self-esteem or has expressed that they're worthless, that they're no good, that they're just a bad person, that would be a sign. And like you said, if there are preparations, if someone sees a person, a teen, or a young adult preparing for death, right, you know, writing out a list of things they want given away, handing out some of their prized possessions to other people, asking someone to make sure that this pet or you know, this other friend is taken care of, that might be a sign that they are thinking of not being around anymore.
One thing I know that you and your peers sometimes talk about is the power of suggestion does not seem to come from conversations about suicide or media events. We had that TV show, 13 Reasons Why, in recent years, but this conversation and talking about it in general doesn't contribute to suicide.
It does not, and I know sometimes adults have worried about that. That if they ask about it, that they're going to put thoughts in a kid's or a teen's heads that is not already there. But there's no evidence for that. There's no evidence that asking an adolescent or asking a younger child about suicide or if they're having thoughts of suicide will cause that. If an adult is worried about that, if someone or a friend is worried about another friend, it is very appropriate to ask and to have a conversation about that. A lot of times, individuals who are having those thoughts very much do want to bring it up with someone but are afraid to. They don't want to upset someone. They don't know how to broach the topic. And so opening that door and saying, hey, you know, I've noticed these changes or I'm worried about you. Are you having any thoughts like this? Lets that person know that you're an okay person to talk to and that you're willing to have that conversation with them.
Would you recommend that a family see 13 Reasons Why?
Well, that show has had some controversy because while talking with a teen, while asking someone about suicide will not lead to suicide, on the flip side, we know that if a suicide is glorified by the media in any way, that there can be a copycat effect. Now, if your teen is already watching that or it's something that you know their friends are, I think it's appropriate to talk about it, maybe view an episode with them and have, you know, use it as a catalyst for the conversation. But to just use a show like that and expect that by watching it that you've had the conversation, I think that would be a misstep because it's not always the best information that's portrayed when there are you know, different kinds of media representations of suicide.
We talked about one of the risk factors being the presence of firearms in the home and some steps that parents can do to make sure that the firearms aren't available to their teen or to other teens or other individuals at all who may visit. You talked about social media being something that's omnipresent today. In what way can we mitigate the negative impacts of social media?
Well, we know that for all kids of all ages, young and also teenagers, that having a kind of limited social media or electronic diet, so to speak, is appropriate. That while it is, you know, especially for teenagers, being on social media, being connected through their electronic devices to their friends is important because that is a way that they stay connected. It's still very appropriate for parents to not only limit that, so it's not, you know, 8 hours a day that they're only connected through electronics, but to have kind of a set amount of time and then encourage their teen to engage with their friends in other ways. But it's also appropriate for parents to have some oversight of what's going on. And that, you know, really should start at a younger age when kids are first introduced to their first phone or their first tablet, their first kinds of social media, or even like YouTube interactions, for parents to not only monitor but have an ongoing conversation with kids and teens about the various kinds of problems or dangers that are out there, because it's not just concerns about bullying, but you know, we know that kids can be vulnerable to lots of different things, whether it's being gullible to be encouraged to purchase things they shouldn't purchase through apps, or adults that may not have their best interests in heart, contacting them in predatory ways. I think parents should really have a hands-on kind of approach with media, and that includes as the their teens age into like late adolescence, talking with them about, you know, you're available to talk if there's something negative going on social media. If you're if peers are engaging in ways that are treating you badly or your friends, we can talk about how you might, you know, handle that. If you need help, you don't know what to do when those kinds of things occur, if you need someone to talk to, if you need help disconnecting, if you don't know if maybe you should, you know, block certain people or cut those kinds of ties, we can help talk about whether this connection you have with someone is a healthy one or not. So it's not just about parents setting rules and saying you have to follow these rules, but really having a conversation about the positives and the negatives of social media, the positives and negatives of electronic communication, and the kinds of worries and concerns that they have and the worries and concerns their teens have.
Teens may not be interested in having these conversations, though. I could see that. I have a grown daughter now, but we didn't delve too far into this, and I knew that there was, sort of had an idea what she was looking at. Okay, so what about screening? We hear about screening for mental health or domestic abuse or COVID or anything these days. Can we screen for suicide?
We can, and so through most health systems, well child, well adolescent visits, there's lots of screening done for lots of things, and suicidal thoughts and depression is one of them, and so that's a great place because children have connections to the primary care providers, to their pediatricians at least once a year, and so that's a place that can be asked. I know schools, several schools in our area have screening devices that they use with their students that ask about things, not just about depression and suicide, but also anxiety, trying to identify kids that might be in need of services and can at least get first filtered through the school psychologist or the guidance counselor at their school and determine through, you know, additional questioning if this is something that needs to get bumped up to them seeing a professional. So we know screening programs are helpful because, again, there are suicidal people who have signs of depression or distress well before they start thinking about suicide, and if we can identify that and engage them in effective treatment, then it may not come to the point where we're talking about or worried about or trying to prevent suicide.
Well, thank you so much for all the answers and the help. I can think of a dozen more questions, so I would love to meet up again next year and continue the conversation. Thank you again for you basically dedicated the whole hour to this, so we're very much appreciated. You send Rob Center a bill, and he'll take good care of that. Thank you, Dr. Nicole Polonichka. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
That is Dr. Nicole Polonichka. She is a PhD, a clinical psychologist with UPMC in central Pennsylvania, based down in the Mechanicsburg, Harrisburg region. Increasing rates of teen suicide, the step off for this, plus some local suicides. So she said at the conclusion of our previous segment, the number 988 is the National Suicide Hotline. Now you can dial that just like 411 or 911, 988. 888 National Suicide Hotline.